Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to The Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can easily get to a healthy weight and get on with your life. That is my mission for you, to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. If you'd like to call in today, the number here is 323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815. You will talk to my engineer, Ronan, first, and then he will patch you through to me, and we will talk about what is on your mind, what is weighing on you. Because the real problem with any kind of binge eating, stress eating, any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not food. The real problem is what's eating at you. And as you know, I live stream on Instagram at the same time, and Josh is saying Trump being elected was traumatic. Yes, last week I talked about Trump, and I talked about the traumatic impact of him and the anxiety that he produces for a lot of people. I got a lot of calls, a lot of emails, and a lot of response thanking me for that, which I thank you for that, because I also got some response that was not so happy with that, but whatever. So last week, again, I talked about our current president and how much anxiety he brings to people. Today, I want to talk about another president, only this is actually not about the president. John Quincy Adams is who I'm going to talk about. I'm going to talk to you about a woman and a president. It's not the story that we have today. So check it out. Okay. It's the 1820s. It's the 1820s, and women barely have any rights. They're not allowed to have an opinion, let alone raise their voices. In fact, it's going to be 100 years before they even have the right to vote. And as a result, there were no female journalists. So why am I telling you about this? Ronan, I just want to get through this piece on what I'm about to say, and then I will take calls. So Carly Gash, I know you're there. Hang on. I'll be done in 5 or 10 minutes. You're going to love it. It's worth waiting for. Okay, so there are no female journalists in the 1820s. And today, there are many great female journalists. So how did that happen? That happened because someone broke the pattern. And I want to tell you the remarkable story of Anne Royal. And hang in there, because this is going to have everything to do with binge eating, stress eating, emotional eating, all of that. So Anne Royal was the first ever female journalist in the United States. She wanted to become a journalist. More specifically, she wanted to interview the president, who at that time was John Quincy Adams. Of course, this was unheard of at the time, right? A woman, journalist, interviewing the president? What? So Adams was not particularly enthused about talking to Anne, and he had his office politely reject her. But here's how clever Anne Royal was. She knew that John Quincy Adams was famous for his nude swims in the Potomac. Every day, the president would wake up at 5 a.m., make a fire, read his Bible, and then go for a swim in the nude. But this one specific morning, Anne went down to the Potomac while he was swimming and sat on his clothes. She refused to leave until he answered all her questions. Don't you love it? I love it. I love it. So in doing so, she became the first woman to interview a president. So isn't that amazing? Women were barely allowed to speak back to their husbands, much less interview a president. the most powerful man in the country, in the world. But she did it because she found a way to break the pattern. And that is the same way that I help you break the pattern of binge eating, stress eating, and emotional eating. We binge because that's our standard. That's our norm. That's what we're used to. We get sad, we binge. We get upset, we binge. We get lonely, we binge. If you don't binge, emotional eat, stress eat, what, you know, fill in whatever word works best for you. Believe it or not, we binge or stress eat or emotional eat because it's part of a pattern. We have a trigger and we have a response. All eating issues are really deleterious, negative coping strategies. It is learned behavior. And the good news is that what you learn, you can unlearn, and then you can find a new way of being in relationship to food in this case, or anything. So think about it. Think about how we've been conditioned to turn to, say, ice cream when we're upset. You watch a TV show and, you know, someone breaks a girl's heart. And what does she do? She reaches for Ben and Jerry's. Or if you are the TV show Friends fan, you will recall that every time Monica broke Chandler's heart, what did he do? Ice cream. So it's become the pattern. So just like the pattern used to be that only men could be journalists, only men could interview the president. So this is trained, learned behavior. And by finding new ways to respond to yourself, that's where I come in, helping you find new ways to be with those feelings, you break the pattern and you create change. So that is why I encourage you to recognize that, well, it's not what you are eating that is the problem. Whatever you're eating, it is the solution to the problem. The real problem is the one that you need to identify and process. So there's some food for thought. And there's my story of the amazing Anne Royal. I hope you love that as much as I do. Okay, and now, Ronan, is Carly Gash there? Hello? She's not there. Oh, Carly Gash is coming back. He's calling her back, or he's finding her somewhere. She's somewhere in Skype. Okay, well, while I wait for Ronan to get Carly Gash, our first caller.
Call has been forwarded through an automatic voice message system.
Who apparently her voicemail is on. Carly Gash, if you are watching this or if you are listening to this, call back. Hello?
Hello.
Oh, there she is. Hi, Carly Gash. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Nina. I'm doing much better today and yesterday. Thank you. So, unfortunately, I didn't hear the beginning of your show. I was trying to call in. Cut up here at work. So, but I want to say that yesterday I stopped this horrible binge. I used to eat like.
I'm sorry. I'm having a hard time hearing you. Your voice is very muffled and a little bit low.
Oh, okay. How about now?
Say something.
Is it better now?
Yes, that's better. Yes, that's better.
Oh, thank you. So yeah, I saw this horrible binge, which I've been having for a while yesterday, because it's just my whole body hurts, everything hurts so much. And I felt powerless. I felt powerless over food. I was thinking like a negative thing, felt like I will never be able to stop that. Oh my God, I will always be like putting on weight and stuff. And then I just started listening to your audiobook, which says about this lady who used to eat for fun and she didn't have enough sweetness in her life.
Yes.
And she was going through a divorce. So I was binging sugar these days.
She thought she was addicted. For those of you who haven't read the book, she really thought she was addicted to sugar. She truly believed she was addicted to sugar and could not stop eating cookies or cookie dough or anything sweet. And so Carly Gash, I guess what you're saying is that you started to check in with yourself and look at why you were binging rather than just focus on the fact that you were binging.
Yes. First of all, I said that it's just a negative thought, and I don't have, in my other clinic, my doctor says, you don't have to believe every stupid thought you have in your head. Like I said, okay, yes, I put on weight. It's hard for me. I'm going through a lot, but I've done this before. There were days where with your therapy and help, and when I was actually doing like your handouts and doing what you say, I've been to such much better in very good places. I said, I did it once. I will do it 2 times, 3 times, 100,000 times if necessary. I said that, and then I said, I'm not powerless over food. There were days where I could be in front of the full fridge among people who are eating and be okay without, like, you know, always thinking about food. And then I thought, like, that lady who was eating sugar, she didn't have enough sweetness and she ate for fun. And I'm like, I need to create more fun in my life. But, and then it led to questions like, what is fun for me? Because I'm not like the type of person who enjoys whatever people consider to be fun. I don't know, going to bars, getting drunk. I can just sit, I don't know, like, and...
Well, wait a minute, Carly Gash. Some people think that going to bars is fun. Not everyone thinks that going to bars is fun. I certainly, I don't know. I'd rather do anything but go to, even if I was single, I'd rather do anything than go to a bar. So what you have to do is figure out, not compare yourself, but figure out what is fun for you, because you are right. You are not having enough fun in your life. You are vulnerable to using food for fun.
So that's the thing, Dr. Nina. I came across very interesting findings. So once I understood, hey, Carly Gash, that's not an option to binge. It's not solving my problems. It's like, it's eating sugar with lime. I cannot eat sugar at all. Like, it really hurts my health. It's really damaging for me. It's not for regular person. And I said, I cannot binge. Even if I could binge on sugar and I would never put on weight, it still ruins the body eating so much like unhealthy food. And then I'm like, hey, it's a temporary solution, an effective one, but it cannot be used forever. Like, and then
can I just interrupt you for a second? It is a temporary solution. You're absolutely right. But it's also a solution which takes you away from yourself. When you turn to food, you abandon yourself. You go away from yourself. Even if you're giving yourself fun, it's really not that fun, is it? So ultimately, being there for yourself, with yourself, and providing something to yourself and for yourself is the opposite of abandonment. That's being responsive to yourself. And when you respond to yourself, you don't need food to abandon yourself.
I always remember these words you just said. I always remember them. But because I was raised in a very abusive environment and kind of like walking over me and like abusing me, that was like registered in my psyche as norm. So for me, when I say to myself, I'm abandoning myself right now by binging, it doesn't register. It doesn't do anything in my head. Cause like for me, norm is being abused. This is my comfortable zone. If somebody abuses me, it's disrespectful for me. Then I feel like comfortable, like a baby, you know, with his like stinky blankie. It's stinky. It needs to be washed, but it's so stinky, but it's so familiar. So I'm like, and for me, taking care of myself and actually living a decent, normal life is something I need to retrain myself. And this is uncomfortable for me. And this is how it is for my psyche. And I'm doing things to like retrain myself. So, but the good thing is that after I said I need more fun, I just sit down and ask myself, what is fun for me? Because my whole life, I've been living in the way that I was just repeating somebody else's behavior, repeating somebody else's dreams, hopes, whatever is comfortable zones. I never knew what's comfortable for me. Nobody taught me, and nobody taught me that I'm that important, that like that color of my room matters, you know, or the color of my towel matters. So I sat down and like, what is fun for me? And I'm like, and I came across very interesting discoveries. And I'm like, wait a minute. I turned to be completely different person from what I just imagined to myself in my head. And I was trying to match myself to this picture or image I draw, which was patchworked from snippets of life of other people surrounding me, or like media representation or whatever, which has nothing to do with real life, real me and real people around me. And then I'm like, oh my goodness, I have to do all this work again, have to find myself, what I like, what I don't like, and surround myself with people who are supporting who I am for real, and like go after my real dreams. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm 36, but I feel like I just was born, and I have to do all this work. And you know what? It was sad a little bit because it's a lot of work, but at the same time, I'm like, oof, I felt relief because I was like, at least I stopped the going the wrong direction for so many years I did that.
Carly,
I stopped. Yeah.
Birth is messy. Birth is messy and painful, and it takes forever. Anyone who's given birth knows that to be true. Birth is painful and messy and takes such a long time. Psychological birth is also messy and painful and takes a long time. Psychological birth is what you're talking about. But if you have the attitude of, ugh, now I've got to raise myself and figure out what I like, it's going to be a lot harder. If you imagine giving birth to a child, you don't look at that child and say, oh, who are you and what do you want? Oh my God, now I've got to raise you. What a burden.
Oh my God, you're so right.
So
no, I will never say that to other babies, but I will tell this to myself. See how much else I need to work to love myself and be considerate about myself. And it's just very sad for me, honestly. Just how could I develop, and or people around me or whatever could develop me to the degree that I just literally don't value my own life, not valued. But I'm going to do this. I'm very, very, I'm very dedicated to it, and I'm going to get it. So you're right. It's messy.
I hear and listen to you. Before you were like, and now I've got to figure out what I like. Now you have this vitality and this energy. So the way that you were thinking about it before was, I'm sure, an identification with other people who looked at you like a burden. You've mentioned that you felt like a burden to your mom, for example. And so the, I got to figure out what I like. That's an identity.
Oh, you're right.
That.
You're right. This is, you are so right. This is not even my own attitude to myself. This is what I got from all people around me, because of course I'm dyslexic. I'm very unique child. I used to be very unique, very different from, and now, even now when I'm dating, you know, I'm like very different. Like, and then I'm like, I get that. And then you taught me not to hang out with those people who are like, and I'm like, you know, people, the problem is not in me. If you don't know how to deal with me, or you haven't seen like a person like me, or maybe I'm like something outside your reality or whatever you get used to see, that's not my problem. It just means that you saw what you saw and you haven't seen other options. So that's really not my problem. I will go and find someone who is maybe hasn't seen it all, but who is curious and like accepting, and who can understand that there are different species of flowers in the world and all of them are beautiful. This type of thinking and like mindset, you know, because this is how I think about other people. And I need to start thinking like this about myself. So,
yeah,
you know,
you do. Yes, you do. I want to just say one thing. Josh, I am reading your thoughts on Trump and I agree with you 100%. And that is why, people, we must vote in November. So, Josh, I am seeing what you're writing. I'm not ignoring it. I agree. Listen to last week's show. You'll see what I mean. I'm not sure if you were there last week. Carly Gash, back to you. The other thing I just want to mention is that when you started, you said, you used the word never and always. I'm never going to be better. I'm always going to struggle. Well, those are two terrible words because, first of all, you don't know the future, but they're about the future. And they're about a future that's grim and horrible. You're never going to live the life you want. You're always going to have to struggle. Well, if that's how you think, then you have real feelings in the present about a future mm-hmm. that may not exist and mm-hmm. hopefully will not exist and will not exist because you're going to change that. So,
they will not exist. I'm going to make it so nice. You know me.
Unless it's, I am always going to take my own side and I am never going to be mean to myself. Those are the ways that you want to talk about your, those are ways that you can use those words. I'm always going to take my own side. I am never going to be mean to myself. Absolutely.
Yeah, with this kind of attitude, it will work. And I want to also mention how I stopped my yesterday's binge. So I was positive that I'm going to binge again on sugar and stuff. But then I'm like, I just said, I don't have to believe it. It's just food. Whatever items are there, it's just food. And me stretching my hands there and mindlessly putting it in my mouth to the point that my mouth hurts because all the sugar kind of eroded my mouth. And I'm like, I don't have to do this to myself. I want some clarity, and I want clarity on a regular basis. I'm not like that powerless. And it also comes back to like my job situation, the kids are babysitting, being really mean to me. And I'm like, you know what? Even though you're like 9 or whatever year old, it doesn't mean that the kids cannot hurt me. Whatever they say hurts me. And I don't have to like say, oh, they're just kids. No, whatever they say hurts me because those are hurtful things. And I'm like, today I said, like one of them said, oh, you do nothing. And I said, you know what? I do a lot of things. I'm babysitting you. And I've seen families like way chiller than this one.
And like, Carly,
I'm trying to figure out.
Carly, yeah,
okay. I'm stopping here.
Don't even respond to a 9-year-old who says you do nothing. You know, and by the way, when that happens, your little 9-year-old or the part of you that accuses yourself of not doing enough gets triggered. Mm-hmm. And now you're responding mm-hmm. to this kid. You know, when you say to a little 9-year-old who goes, you do nothing, because that's a power struggle. You say, mm-hmm. you're right. I do absolutely nothing. Now go clean up your room. But
that's
we
what happened. I started. Yeah. That's
just
what happened.
Just know.
Next time, I'll just say, what an interesting thought. Go back to your school.
Exactly. And in the meantime, you are giving psychological birth to yourself, and you're going to take care of that baby, Carly Gash, and not abandon her and not be mean to her. And you're going to take care of her. And there's some food for thought. Going to be, when you're kind to yourself, you feel better. When you feel better, you're less likely to use food to feel better.
I'll go and do this.
You're doing a great job. You really are. Mm-hmm. Every week, I hear more insight. And progress is not a straight line. There are dips mm-hmm. in progress. But ultimately, you know, two steps forward, one step back, you are still a step ahead. So
it's an upward trend all the time.
Yes. So keep up the good work and keep us posted.
Thank you. I will. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day. And let's not be discouraged with politics and everything, because I believe in human power. We people should be just very strong, because we all of us are very powerful. And it's like this 9-year-old saying things to me. They can say whatever they want to say, but it's about us. We know that we're beautiful, powerful, and cool. So let's just connect to each other and do the right thing. Just be vocal about it, period.
Beautifully said. Thank you, Carly Gash.
Thank you.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye. Have a good day. Bye.
Bye. Josh, I suggest that you check out last week's radio show. It is all about an essay that I wrote in a book called Three Tropes on Trump. And it is an essay I wrote in this book called What is the Matter with Donald Trump? But it was really about explaining him, but also explaining why we can be so triggered. And I was not actually, someone wrote in and said, oh, you're talking about politics. No, I was not talking about politics. I was talking about specifically Trump and how he can create such a sense of anxiety, can re-traumatize us. Christina called in last week and said she was really re-traumatized because her father was the same type of personality. And so it brought up the same type of helplessness and powerlessness and anxiety that she felt all during childhood. So you might find it an interesting episode to check out. Okay, so again, if you would like to join me and call in, if something is on your mind, the number here is 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815. I would love to hear from you. And now I am going to share an article I wrote for Psyche Magazine, which is an online magazine. It's the new offshoot of Aeon, which is an extremely popular and amazing online magazine. And this is an article I wrote called How to Stop Emotional Eating. And it really is the psychoanalytic, I'm not demonizing Trump, Josh. I'm talking about who he is and how he affects people. And it's not about demonizing him. It's about how he acts. There is not a way to think positively about a person who is destructive and creates chaos. That would be to, by the way, for those of you who are simply listening, I'm getting a message saying we have to find a way to think positively. No, thinking positively without recognizing the trauma, all it does is dismiss reality. If you are traumatized because someone in a position of power, whether it's Trump or your father or your boss or someone you know is in a position of power and has demoralized you, creates anxiety, you feel powerless, you feel whatever you feel, and you just try to think positively, you are dismissing how you feel. You are dismissing that there is some kind of something being activated, whether it's only in the present or whether it's also from the past. So you want to be able to say, look, this is what is happening. I am feeling traumatized. I am feeling anxious. I'm feeling re-traumatized. Want to deal with that? First, you've got to acknowledge it. You've got to recognize it. You've got to acknowledge it. And then you reassure yourself. I do have some power in my life. I do have the ability to vote. If it's a boss, I can speak up or I can look for another job. You can think about the action that you can take. But not every situation is one that you can positive think away. Not every situation is one that in the moment you want to look on the bright side, because some situations are just dreadful. And if we try to convince ourselves or each other that it's not as bad as it is, then we never learn to process how the bad, icky, ick, the yucky, awful, anxious, terrible feelings that are part of life, sometimes more intensely than other times. We need to be able to be with those feelings and process them and feel them without, say, turning to food or something else. Okay. All right, so let me, I'm going to start reading this article. If anyone wants to call and interrupt me, please do so. I'd rather hear from you, and I can always go back to the article. So, I have a weakness for donuts, confessed Arlene, a 35-year-old teacher who came to me for psychoanalysis. She began craving donuts shortly after her first child was born. She'd sneak one bite, then another, and before she knew it, She'd eaten 3 or 4 donuts, sometimes more. Every time it happened, Arlene felt deeply ashamed and vowed never, ever to let it happen again. She vowed to have more control. So days of stringent dieting would follow these episodes, but eventually her willpower failed and she would head back to Krispy Kreme. "I eat so many donuts, my stomach hurts," she would say, her eyes filling with tears. "Gross." She sighed in dismay. "I know they're bad for me, but I can't stop eating them. It doesn't make sense. How do I get over this horrible donut problem?" I reassured Arlene that donuts weren't the problem. It's perfectly fine to have donuts or any other sweets occasionally as part of a balanced diet. But Arlene wasn't eating them for enjoyment. She wasn't eating them as part of a balanced diet. She felt compelled to eat many donuts at once to the point of being in physical pain, and doing so made her feel ashamed. So during our therapy sessions, it became apparent to me that Arlene turned to donuts because of an underlying problem, which is her difficulty identifying and processing certain emotional states. By focusing on donuts and her weight, Arlene distracted herself from what was really upsetting her. And this is known as emotional eating. We are eating to distract ourselves from one thing instead of worrying about, something painful in our lives, something upsetting. We are creating physical pain, or we are worrying about how much we're eating, or we distract from one thing by focusing on food. That's why I call emotional eating a frenemy. It is a friend in that it is doing something for you. Like Carly Gash was saying, gave her a sense of fun in a world when she has very little fun. It provides some kind of temporary relief, but that is temporary. And of course, it does not resolve the problem. So it is a friend in that it helps you cope in some way, but that it is an enemy in that it also hurts you. It hurts your body. It hurts your spirit. It hurts your relationship with yourself. And so emotional eating also masks the underlying cause for why you're eating. And you, if you've listened to the show, you've heard me talk before. If you're a first-time listener, I'm about to tell you that it's like a weed and a root. If you focus on the weed and just pluck it, thinking like going on a diet, "Oh, I'll just go on a diet. I'll change my relationship with food." Or people get gastric bypass surgery, or lap band surgery, or sleeve surgery, or all the new surgeries. "Oh, I'm going to resolve the problem. The problem is food." Guess what happens? The problem comes back because they have just plucked a weed. They haven't gotten to the proverbial root. And those root issues are often hidden from us. They are hidden in our unconscious. And yet they still motivate so much of what we do. So self-defeating behaviors like emotional eating may not make sense on the surface, but there will be an underlying explanation. As I say to my patients, it is not logical, it is psychological. And Lisa is saying, I've spent the day at work crying with emotional internal pain and ended up stuffing chocolate at work to mask the upset I had at work. I felt that while I was picking chocolate, those at work wouldn't think I was upset. Yeah. So I guess I would say, Lisa, what are your fears about people knowing that you're upset? Maybe you have some doubt that people can respond to you being upset, that they are going to care about you being upset. So that would be an interesting thing to look at. So as a psychoanalyst, as a therapist, I take a psychoanalytic approach to resolve emotional eating or any issue. I delve deep into those hidden parts of the mind, the parts that are hidden from us, but are so responsible for so much of our behavior. And this can take a bit of work, as you can imagine. So Arlene had gotten so good at turning to donuts, she didn't know what was actually causing her discomfort or her distress. It was hidden from her unconscious mind. So a helpful approach for achieving lasting change involves identifying and digging up those root issues, learning a new way of responding to yourself. As I said earlier, you can unlearn what you've learned and you can learn a new way. So I want to give you some guidance, which I give in this article. Again, it's on Psyche, and it's called How to Stop Emotional Eating. So here's what to do. Stop dieting. Stop dieting. Many people try to resolve emotional eating by going on a weight loss diet, restricting calories or certain foods, but this is an ineffective strategy to deal with eating issues. Most diets fail. And they fail because they are a temporary fix, and in the long run, they lead to weight gain. This is this dirty, horrible secret about the diet industry that the $60 billion diet industry does not want you to know, which is that in the long run, dieting causes you to gain weight, not lose it. But from a psychological perspective, diets involve deprivation. The anticipation or the experience of not being able to have what you want only makes you want it more, which of course leads to overeating or binging. If you are thinking about not eating pizza, pasta, or ice cream, then you've got pizza, pasta, and ice cream on your mind all day. And that puts the focus on the wrong thing, which is what you're eating instead of why. But ultimately, diets fail because they only deal with food. They don't address what makes you overeat or binge in the first place. And if you are turning to food, you're turning away from something else. So instead of dieting, you need to consider what's eating at you. Josh on Instagram is saying that he just had a huge vegetarian burrito. So I guess I would say, Josh, again, it's not what you're eating that is the problem. Not that there's anything wrong with a vegetarian burrito, but what motivated it. It's one thing to say, gosh, I'm really hungry, starving. I'm gonna have that burrito. That's just eating because you're hungry. But if you're eating a burrito or anything else to resolve something emotional, I'm going to eat that burrito and I'm not going to think about this, or I'm not going to feel something, or I'm going to just distract myself, or I'm going to make myself go into that numb eating zone, right? That zone where you don't feel anything. You don't think anything. You're just sort of, it's just you and the burrito or whatever. Then that's what you want to look at. So say, Josh, if you feel like answering on the thread on Instagram, what was going on before you ate the burrito? Was it hunger? Or was there something causing you emotional distress? Was something bothering you? So to crack the code to emotional eating, because often, you know, it's hard to know. It's hard to know, well, what was going on? We get, like Arlene, you get so fast at going right to food that you don't even know what is triggering you. So many people overeat to avoid emotions. So remember, he's saying before the burrito, he was very anxious. Okay, so eating the burrito probably did a couple of things. One is when you eat a lot of food, you can have kind of a relaxing effect on your body. So sometimes people who are anxious will eat a lot to have that physical relief of the physical manifestation of anxiety. So you eat a bunch of food and you eat a big old burrito. It's hard to feel that heart pounding tension of anxiety. You're basically self-medicating your body. So for Josh and for anyone else who can relate to that, finding a new way of being with anxiety is important. What What is making you anxious? What is the situation that is causing the anxiety? How else can you respond to the anxiety? And a lot of times people learn when they feel anxious or they feel upset, they learn to like react, eat the burrito or do something else or try to change how they feel. They don't learn how to respond to themselves. And that's why it's so important to learn how to respond to yourself. And what do you say to a friend if that friend is anxious? Do you say, oh, here, eat this burrito. You're going to feel so much better. It's going to be great. Or do you say to your friend, hey, what's upsetting you? Talk to me. What's going on? And then do you say to your friend, yeah, that sounds tough. I'm sorry you're going through that, or I get it, or I'm there, right? You're responding to your friend, hopefully. And that's the idea, to respond to yourself, to treat yourself as you would a friend. So back to Arlene. Remember how she ate so much her stomach hurt? That was our first clue to solving the mystery of why she couldn't stop eating donuts. And by the way, I like to say that I am a detective of the mind. I am a detective, and I am here to help you solve the mystery of why you are turning to food. And when you're a detective, detectives don't say, oh my gosh, that was a terrible clue. That is a shameful clue. Detectives say, oh, that's interesting. Oh, that's a good clue. Now I know more. We have to have the same type of approach. Huh, what's going on with me? What are the clues? Let me be interested instead of shaming myself for whatever the clue is. And Josh says he feels like an animal in the jungle when he eats. Well, that just shows that there's something desperate going on. I would conjecture that there's a desperate need to deal with that anxiety. There's some kind of like, what is an animal in the jungle? Do they're eating fast and they're desperately eating their prey, whatever. Now, so my interpretation, and Josh, you tell me if I'm wrong, or if you tell me your perspective, the clue would be, well, that is a frenzied, desperate need to stop feeling anxious. So you say, oh, instead of, oh my God, I eat like an animal. It's okay. That's how desperate I am to get away from anxiety. Where did I learn to respond to anxiety in this way? Where did I learn that anxiety is so scary and upsetting? Where did I learn not to respond to anxiety and instead try to get away from it any way possible? So I learned that Arlene had been raised in a family in which everyone was expected to be grateful and happy all the time. If she was hurt or upset, she was told to stop whining. The message from her parents was clear. It was not acceptable to express emotional pain. By eating donuts until she was in physical pain, Arlene was unconsciously avoiding her emotional pain by converting it to physical pain. And when she was able to process this disavowed pain during our work together, instead of blocking it out, she stopped overeating donuts. So Josh is saying that people tell him he eats extremely quickly. Well, I'd like to know a lot more about that. Notice I'm being curious, not critical. Critical is, oh, why do you eat so quickly? Curious is, what is that about? What is it that, you know, are you trying to quickly get away from a feeling? Is it uncomfortable to eat? Do you feel weird eating in front of other people? Do you feel uncomfortable? So there could be a lot of reasons for that. And again, when you are curious, you are more likely to find the answers. When you're critical, all you do is feel bad. And Josh says he doesn't know why he does that, but that's okay. Of course you don't know why, but what you want to do is discover it. I wonder what that's about. What would the experience be of eating slowly? What is the discomfort in that? Sometimes people will tell me that they try to eat, say they'll try to eat their forbidden food, cake, instead of at the, you know, instead of in front of the fridge, sort of furtively and stealthily shoving cake in their mouth in front of an open refrigerator while no one can see whether there's anyone in the house or not. If the idea of just taking a piece of cake and putting it on a plate and taking a fork and eating it almost fills them with anxiety. Why? What would it be like to do that? And that's when you realize like what might come up. So curious. What's that about? When you're curious, you're going to find answers. When you're critical, you just make yourself feel bad or shame yourself, make yourself feel bad. And then, of course, you're going to turn to food again to escape how bad you feel. So it is a vicious, horrible cycle that can be broken with curiosity. Curiosity may have killed the cat, but in our case, curiosity helps you understand yourself better. No way to make that rhyme. So Western society often promotes the idea that expressing emotions is weak. Many girls and women are taught that it is not nice to feel or express anger. Of course, that is impossible. So a lot of girls and women will get mad at themselves for eating too much or for gaining weight. Really, they were already angry, but their anger belongs to something or someone else. But there's a prohibition against feeling that. You have to be a nice girl. Nice girls don't get mad. Similarly, boys get a sense from an early age that boys don't cry. They don't cry. And then they grow into men who have a hard time expressing vulnerability. It's so interesting about this because I was in a little group with when my youngest daughter was a baby for a few years. She was in a little parent friend group, and there were two girls and two boys. And if the girl fell down, the girl would be like, "Oh, honey, are you okay? Oh, it's all right. That you're okay. I know that hurts." Mostly was, "Oh, you're okay," which is totally dismissive. But, and with the, if the boy felt down, it was like, "Oh, it's okay, little man. You got that. You're all right." Like the response to just the conditioning to like babies was so interesting on from a gender perspective. So we are taught early on, we get these messages. Don't cry. Don't get mad. What do we do with our feelings? We cannot positive think them away. We cannot stuff them, starve them away. We cannot work them away. We cannot gamble them away. We cannot drop them. We cannot let them go. We can only feel them. And Josh is saying that he's going to be curious and he's going to try loving himself more. I like the sound of that, Josh. So ask yourself, what is stopping yourself from loving yourself more right now? What needs to change for you to love yourself more? And of course, I'm talking to Josh on Instagram, but I'm talking to you. I'm talking to you who's listening. Because a lot of people, most people, have a hard time loving themselves. They have a very easy time looking at what's wrong, discovering what's wrong, pointing out the flaws, and feeling terrible about themselves. That's easy. But for some reason, it's very difficult to honor what's right. But practice makes progress. So the more that you can look at what you like about yourself, when you can be a friend to yourself, when you can be accepting of yourself, you don't have to be perfect. You can't be perfect. You can't be perfect. So don't seek perfection. Josh says he needs a safe environment. What is safety? What keeps you from feeling safe? How are you unsafe to yourself? Sometimes, if we're mean to ourselves, we feel like, well, no one's going to be mean to us because we're already doing it. Right. If you are mean to yourself, then you don't have to worry about feeling all good about yourself. And here comes someone who's mean to you and points out your flaws, which is humiliating. So there are lots and lots of reasons for why we relate to ourselves the way we relate to ourselves and how that pertains to what happens with food. And I'm going to keep talking about this next week, when I will be here as usual, here on the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio and also live streaming on Instagram. I am here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific. And if you would like to connect with me, please go to my Facebook page, Dr. Nina's Food for Thought Community. You can also get the first two chapters of my book, The Binge Cure, for free. Go to my website, Dr. Nina Inc., DrNinaInc, DrNinaInc.com. Sign up, get your free two chapters. You can get them within moments of me ending, which I'm about to do. So please, everybody, stay safe, be kind to yourself and to others, and I'll see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.